Welcome back to the Florida History Podcast. I'm Carter Krishnire.
And I'm Robert Bucciolato.
Robert, Andrew Jackson is a character in American history that stirs up all sorts of emotions, both positive and negative. I think for a certain generation of people, a certain vintage of people, he was a great American hero, the hero of the Battle of New Orleans, the first president that brought the masses into the political process. But for more recent generations, he is a much more controversial figure, a man who committed genocide and the Trail of Tears and an unavowed racist and really an individual that was unrefined and unsophisticated and unfit for public office. The bottom line is Andrew Jackson is one of the most controversial figures in American history, and we're going to talk a little bit about him today. Because he was, believe it or not, for a lot of people who may not know this, one of the most important characters in Florida history, and the single most important reason Florida became part of the United States was because of Andrew Jackson. So we're going to talk a little bit about him today.
Well, no, I was just going to say I have very vivid memories of my eighth grade teacher when he was teaching us civics, constantly telling me that I'm too hard on Jackson. But, you know, truth be told, he's a very important figure in Florida history. He's certainly something that we have to cover, that we have to deal about and talk about. There's a lot of things that he did that would make him an admirable figure in certain ways. Certainly the fact that when you look at all of the previous American leaders, such as Washington, Adams, Madison, he comes out as sort of an unexpected flame. He bursts onto the scene from an ordinary, I'd say lower middle to working class background. He worked his way through, getting a military commission. And so there's a lot of things that are very interesting and compelling for him as a character. That being said, especially when it came to Native Americans, he's done some pretty grotesque things. So there's always been a duality in his relationship when it comes to how people think about him. Certainly, as we move further and further away from the sort of Americana concept of life, and we try to, you know, with this whole new melting pot society that we're taking up, we have a more of a lasting appreciation for human rights. We're a lot more compassionate about the African Americans, rights for civil rights and for equality, whereas Andrew Jackson, not only did he not like Indians, but he was a staunchly supportive when it came to slavery. He had a lot of slaves. So as we get past all of that and as we start being advocates for Native Americans, we seem to be diverting our whole national dialogue more and more away from Jackson, his ideals towards national expansionism, towards having a united continent, manifest destiny, all of those things. And we are now sort of the anti-Jackson age. I mean, the best thing to say is that we were raised in a world that revered Andrew Jackson.
So, Robert, we spent a lot of time thus far on this series setting the table about the Jefferson administration and the Madison administration and the Monroe administration. Well, actually, we haven't gotten to the Monroe administration yet, sorry. But the Jefferson administration and the Madison administration and their desire to conquer Florida, their desire to forcibly take Florida via covert means from Spanish control, and Spain was aligned with Britain. Remember, that was a big, big part of it, to outright American control. And it went from a tacit, subtle effort to an outright effort at armed conquest during the war of latter stages of the war of 1812 and 1814, General Andrew Jackson first interacts with Spanish Florida directly in November 1814 at the Battle of Pensacola, fighting against the British and the Spanish. The Spanish, by this time, had invited British troops into Florida. As we mentioned, they were aligned. That's the whole context of this whole period, is the alliance between Spain and Britain from the 1790s onward, and we're now in 1814. So the British have been invited into Florida by their allies, the Spanish. So there are British troops in Florida at this point, and Andrew Jackson, General Jackson, is fighting the Creek Native Americans in Georgia. The Creeks are British allies. As we've talked about before, Native American groups were all aligned with the British by this point. Very few Native Americans sided with the United States. And after Jackson had won the Battle of Horseshoe Bend, many of those Creek fled into Florida, and Jackson pursued them. British Captain George Woodbine of the Royal Marines traveled to Pensacola in July of 1814 and was warmly received by the Spanish. And Woodbine was liaisoning with the Creek Native Americans who had fled into Florida from Georgia, arming them, in fact. We'll get into this in the next episode. The British were very adept at arming runaway slaves as well and turning them against the Americans. Something I actually ideologically agree with, but let's just take this again from Jackson's perspective for a minute, because he's pursuing the Native Americans and the runaway slaves and the British, right, who were his enemy for life since he was 9 years old and was a young child in South Carolina during the American Revolution. So the Spanish governor at this point invites the British or their allies, as we've talked about in European wars, been their allies for 20 years. As we talked about last week, the Spanish are effectively fighting American colonists in East Florida in a connected conflict with a war between the United States and Great Britain, the Spanish, of course, being British allies. So at this point, Napoleon has actually been defeated and exiled to Elba. We know he will escape early next year. But at this point, Spain and Britain are still aligned. And Spain, the Spanish governor invites the British to station a force in Pensacola.
Yeah, so Jackson, it has to be remembered, he got his start in the military during the Creek War in 1813. Before that, you know, he was elected to, you know, state senate, judgeships, all these different things. And then he got his start in the Creek War. And then he became a major general in the Volunteer Army, which the Volunteer Army at the time was separate from the U.S. Army. And, you know, of course, he defeated the British in New Orleans, defeated them in Pensacola. And then he decides that he wants to go ahead and do an expedition to conquer Florida. In a, you know, around 1817, and the professional military is very jealous of Jackson because he was essentially the hero of 1812, and a lot of people dispute the validity, or I guess we just say the scope of his victory in New Orleans. And a lot of people are kind of enraged at the fact that he conquered Pensacola and then just sort of abandoned it. So, you know, they didn't really trust him. The people that were, you know, of a certain pedigree, they didn't like him. They didn't trust him. They thought he was crazy. There is a reputation that people, I think people have, where they just assume that people were okay with Indians being killed by the U.S. military back in the 1820s or 1810s. Let me just, you know, dissolve you of that myth right now. They were not. And there were a lot of people that were frustrated in government and sickened by the Butcher's Bill every single time Andrew Jackson came back from a war. You know, the Creek War, more Native Americans were killed in one day, and it was by Andrew Jackson, than at any other point in American history. And there was a lot of protest in Congress. Now, what you alluded to is the great friggin' irony in all of this is that the last person you would expect to be a champion of Andrew Jackson was the new Secretary of State for Monroe, John Quincy Adams. And every single time he would get involved in one of these campaigns, a small little diplomatic incident would break out where, you know, Andrew Jackson essentially murders some British officers that surrendered themselves. You know, and everybody's asking for his blood, and John Quincy Adams whispers something in, you know, Monroe's ear, and Andrew Jackson gets elevated. And I think I don't think Andrew Jackson deserved this protection, based on them liking him or admiring him. I think they saw him as a useful tool. I think Monroe and John Quincy Adams were tired of waiting for Florida. I think they wanted the entire Eastern Seaboard, and they realized that they were going to get it by having somebody like Andrew Jackson to let him loose and let him sweep across Florida. And I think it was a calculated move on their part. They knew his background. These were not foolish men. They knew what they were getting themselves into. They knew that it was going to get bloody and violent, and they went along with it because at the end of the day, they wanted this territory. They wanted it sealed up. They wanted it done and settled. We had been, us and Spain had been dancing around one another for decades now. And so they approved it, and he began his expedition in 1818. And he wreaked havoc, pure and simple. You know, they never really had a chance. And he was asked a few times to be governor of Florida. He declined it twice. But what ended up happening was he basically agreed to be commissioner of the United States of Florida, which was also governor of the territories. But they had to create a new position for him. And basically, he, with an iron fist, managed to settle the Seminoles and the Spaniards. And he did it in record time. And his appointment, he only agreed to do it if the appointment orders were delivered ambiguously to him by James Monroe, basically to make sure that he had maximum coverage over any fallout for his methods. And John Quincy Adams went to great lengths to protect Jackson. Following his execution of two British citizens, not military, but citizens, at St. Mark's, there were calls for Jackson to be arrested. There was one famous cabinet position in the Monroe White House cabinet meeting where that was topic number one. Where we can
So maybe we'll do another podcast on the battle at some point in the future. I don't want to get too deep into the battle, but we'll say that the British were in Pensacola. They were defending a fort, and Jackson had a plan to run the British out of Pensacola and march to New Orleans, which, of course, we know he did. Now, it's important to realize that the Spanish had lost control, and we talked about this in the last episode. They'd lost control over a lot of the Florida hinterland at this point. So while they have the British sitting in Pensacola with Spanish authority, right, British troops, Spanish civil authorities, there is vast land in the Florida panhandle where Andrew Jackson and his American soldiers are marching in violation of Spanish sovereignty. Keep in mind, again, the British have been invited into Florida by the Spanish to defend Pensacola. They have not been, the Americans have not been invited in. So Jackson has about 4,000 troops marching on Pensacola, and there are far fewer Spanish and British defenders, combined maybe about 1,000. And so, and I should mention lots of Creek warriors, obviously. The Creeks are aligned with the British. They have fled Jackson. They've fled the Americans. They've come into Florida, which is not American territory. And again, the Americans are pursuing them, but they have crossed an international boundary in the process, which is a violation of Florida sovereignty or Spain's sovereignty, something we're going to explore a little further in the next episode. So, long story short, again, maybe we'll do another episode on the battle itself and get into where the British were positioned and where the Spanish were. We can do that. But just for the in the larger context of this series, on the conquest of Florida, Jackson wins the Battle of Pensacola. The British and the Spanish lose, and the British are pushed out of what is current Florida, right? Mobile also, as we mentioned previous episodes, was part of West Florida at the time, all the way to Baton Rouge. The Americans have already annexed a lot of that territory. They annexed some of the territory during this war. Mobile was annexed in 1813 by the Americans. Anyway, Robert, to you on Jackson and this incursion into Florida, War of 1812.
Okay, well, the War of 1812 actually ended in 1814. Jackson's famous Battle of New Orleans actually took place after the treaty was signed, ending the war. But, obviously there was no internet, there was no communication apparatus that would be able to teletype or anything like that to the United States what was happening in Europe when it came to the peace treaty. So it was a really great victory. It was something that really, as you mentioned, catapulted him to national prominence. He was still a long way off from being, you know, like an Eisenhower or a Grant or something like that, but he was very admired. So the United States, under the Secretary of State at the time, who was Monroe, who would end up becoming President Monroe, really wanted to push Spanish interests away from Florida, off of the continent. And at the time, there was this odd sharing of Florida between Spain and some marginal interests with the British. And so his orders were kind of, I'd say, they weren't explicit. It was enough for him to know that he could do it, that he would sort of enter Florida and have carte blanche. But if it was a disaster, there was enough coverage for the administration, for the Secretary of State to not be blamed. So in 1814, Andrew came in here. Spain was fighting a series of revolutions in South America, so they were pretty distracted, and they weren't really that interested in the rest of their territories, including most of Florida. So he came in there and he started this, lack of a better word, I'd say this pincer attack. And he would, with lightning efficiency, he was able to move men. He was able to make sure that they were supplied well. He was a wonderfully tactical soldier. And so he pushed in, and there was the first main target for the United States was there was this fort in North Florida that was filled almost to the brim with escaped slaves. And so that was the prime first target that they wanted to do. And they succeeded. The fort was completely destroyed.
Actually, Robert, hold it there. Next week, we're going to get specifically into that issue. I've got a whole vivid description of the destruction of the fort, and that was in 1818. But yes, you're absolutely right. This was the Battle of Pensacola. War of 1812 was the beginning of the incursion of Andrew Jackson into Florida, the beginning of in pursuing Native Americans, trying to catch them after he defeated them in battle in what is Georgia, which is U.S. territory at this point, into Florida. Where there are British troops in Pensacola. The Spanish have, again, I have to reiterate this, the Spanish have invited the British troops in, which they had not invited the Americans to encroach their territory. So the British were there legitimately, the Americans were not. But this is the start of Jackson violating international law, violating territorial integrity, marching where he wants to march, and eventually conquering Florida for the United States. So we're going to get to that battle, the fort, which was on the Apalachicola River, next week, and we'll hear from. We'll get deeper into that issue. So thank you once again for listening, and we'll be back next week. And we've already gotten a teaser about what we're going to talk about next week. Thanks.